Good evening. My name is Michael McCusker. I have two basic topics for today, and I'd like to get into the first one. It's written by Bob Van Dyke for the Daily Astorian. He is the Forest Policy Manager for the Wild Salmon Center in Portland. County forest strategy is short-sighted. On Wednesday, the Oregon Board of Forestry met in Enterprise to discuss the future of Oregon State Forests, including the Clatsop State Forest that covers more than 100,000 acres of Clatsop County. County leaders are pushing to make timber production the primary purpose of the state forests, and county residents who want a balanced approach to the management of state forests need to make their voices heard. The state forests originally came into public ownership after unsustainable harvest and logging caused fires. A magnificent rainforest of spruce, fir, and cedar was cut over by private owners and then abandoned to avoid paying taxes. Rich salmon habitat was left degraded. Ownership fell to the county, who then gave the land to the state to be managed for the people of Oregon under a visionary mandate for greatest permanent value, quote-unquote. The original 1931 law empowering acquisition of the land by the state called for watershed protection, water conservation and recreation, as well as growing forest crops. By emphasizing multiple uses and permanent benefits, the state sought a long-term balance for forest health. Unfortunately, political pressure for timber harvest to be promoted above all other values threatens to repeat the mistakes of the last century. Clatsop County commissioners have endorsed just such a short-sighted approach. The current law that governs the state forests provides for timber production for government revenues as part of the wide range of benefits of the forest. But the law also includes essential sideboards to protect long-term forest values. For example, current law says that any plan must restore habitat for salmon as well as protect soil, water, and wildlife. The Clatsop County Commission has joined with other county governments to propose removing the conservation protections. The county proposal deletes language that requires restoration of salmon habitat and removes language that requires protection of soil, water, and wildlife. The county has a friendly audience on the current Board of Forestry, which is dominated by timber and labor interests. The board recently voted 5-2 to weaken conservation protections, increase clear cuts, and decrease goals for older forest. Now, fully 70% of the harvestable stands will be open to clear-cutting, and only 30% will be designated for older forest. The Board of Forestry decision will make the state forests look more like the surrounding industrial forests of Clatsop County, where clear-cutting and short rotations dominate the landscape. Not even a single small watershed gets permanent conservation protection under the current state forest plan, and clear-cutting would be even more extensive under the county proposal. Citizens who want strong protection for valuable salmon runs, refuges for threatened wildlife, or just a protected watershed for hiking and camping for generations to come have to go elsewhere. A growing group of 20 fishing, conservation, and recreation organizations has joined together in a common statement against this county push for timber over all other values on our state forests. The common statement proposes a mixed approach that includes some of the forest as permanently protected for conservation values. The timber wars of the last decade have left scars on the economic and political landscape. The historic focus on timber production spawned a swing toward environmental protection. The county proposal would swing the pendulum back to the timber production extreme. It is time to find a new way forward on Oregon State Forests, one that mixes permanent protected areas with productive timber management. The county proposal for timber dominance would repeat the mistakes of the last century and shortchange future generations. Clatsop residents who want permanent protections for some of their state forest watersheds need to let their commissioners know. And that was by Bob Van Dyke, who is the Forest Policy Manager for the Wild Salmon Center in Portland. County forest strategy is short-sighted, and it appeared in Tuesday's Daily Astorian. And I think that not only the public, but the newly elected county commissioners should watch these, I was going to say dead ducks, but I guess I should call them lame ducks on the county commission, because they might be making policy, which these people are going to have to live with by the time they take their office in January. So it does make a good case for sitting them now instead of having to wait 6 months. At any rate, get a hold of your county commissioner, new and old, and tell them how you feel about going back to timber production overall. And somewhat in the same vein, but a little bit differently, I'd like to devote the rest of the program to LNG. There is to be a meeting today at 1 o'clock at the Guy Boynton County Center, which used to be the Public Health Center, if anybody remembers. And it's about Oregon LNG. And I believe on the lease of land that they have been. Yes, here's the note. A public hearing on the consolidated land use application from Oregon LNG for a proposed natural gas pipeline is scheduled for Thursday, June 10th. And it will begin at 1 p.m. at the Judge Guy Boynton Building, 857 Commercial Street, Astrovia, or as friends of mine call it, Astormia, which today certainly is. So what I'd like to do is read something that I've written and rewritten, and which I will, if I am able to speak today, bring up and read. And then I'd like to follow it by interviews that I collected about LNG back in the days when Oregon LNG's predecessor, Calpine, railroaded LNG through the Port Commission and indeed railroaded it into us without us much having to say about it. And these were some of the original comments back in 2005 after I finished my tirade. And I call it Fool's Gold Rideau. And this is my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only in the entire universe. It seems almost deja vu that the only remaining LNG corporation attempting to build on the Columbia River is the one that started this mess to begin with. One down and one to go, a friend said to me a few days ago, referring to Bradwood's bankruptcy. But I am not so sanguine. I think of the tyrant Athenian citizens rid themselves of, only for him to return with an army of mercenaries who executed everyone who banished him. The testimony being collected today at a public hearing is misplaced. It should be held in a courtroom to determine if criminal acts have been committed in foisting LNG on the lower Columbia River. The sub rosa fabric of conspiracy to force LNG upon us should be investigated in a court of law, and those who knowingly broke the law should be jailed. Blackmailing the port when it balks at the corrupt and conceivably illegal LNG lease, and threatening personal liability of former port commissioners, justified only that it would serve them right, is an arrogant misuse of the law by Oregon LNG. Whatever value put to liquefied natural gas as an interim energy source between oil and alternative energy, the method of sneaking it through the back door with the complicity of the Astoria Port Commission with scarce public notice has rendered suspect every claim made by the LNG corporations. Apologists said the secrecy was necessary because of competition, and pointed to a couple of other LNG corporations who also wanted a piece of the Columbia. But it was a dishonest argument at its very root. The competition was obviously waiting to covertly rush in and gobble up the lower Columbia while the shock was still setting in. From the beginning, when LNG was inflicted upon us by the Port Commission through secrecy and deception, with the public given little opportunity to have any say, all sorts of crucial issues have been skimmed over or negated by the Port and Clatsop County Commissioners, such as public safety and maritime security, impacts on ocean and river travel, effects on fishing and commerce, amounts of environmental contamination and pollution, the wisdom of building huge, volatile terminals on earthquake subduction zones, and the probable large-scale obliteration of fish habitat and protected wetlands. Questions about LNG's unstable effects on local communities have received evasive answers, not to mention blatant disinformation about the possible calamitous consequences upon our beautiful, fragile environment that has been the battered victim of numerous earlier echo rapes. The entire LNG endeavor has been an egregious example of duplicity, misinformation, and denial of public process to approve or disapprove. Instead of being the voice of decision, the people have all along been relegated to being mere supplicants to arbitrary decisions that would most likely affect our collective environment for generations. Neither the Port of Astoria Commission nor the Clatsop County Commission should have authority or power to decide LNG on the Columbia River. LNG is just too big and with too many stark consequences for such parochially biased agencies to be the prime decision makers, especially on vital issues that have such probable outcomes as devastating the river estuary and the enormous alteration of the Columbia River culture in which we live. Paradoxically, there is also the matter that the federal government claims the right to overrule any local decision to exclude LNG. The U.S. Senate even rejected a proposal that would allow state governments to prevent LNG because of public health or environmental concerns. Fortunately, the Oregon state government has been critical of LNG claims and has generally acted in defiance of the federal mandate set up by the Bush administration. From the outset of the LNG invasion, a referendum should have been held about LNG, if not by the entire states of Oregon or Washington, at least by the communities of the two states on both sides of the Columbia River that would be directly impacted by LNG. Also, the tendency to treat each LNG project separately rather than the combined effects of all proposed LNG projects on the river and its communities has been very narrow and delusional. The election we should have had should have included them all on a single ballot. I think a defining moment of the LNG fiasco was when public officials who were in cahoots with LNG claimed the need for police presence at public meetings because opponents were, quote-unquote, unruly. That certainly sounded like people who were supposed to represent the public were exerting police intimidation to squelch public dissent after denying the public's right to decide. And that's something I wrote and might be able to testify to today. And now, I'd like to read some of these interviews that I received back in 2005 at the advent of LNG. I'd like to start with Peter Hutala. Actually, it's from an article he wrote for the Times Eagle. Peter Hutala has recently been elected to the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners, and he unsuccessfully campaigned for the Port of Astoria Commission in 2005, primarily to overturn the port's clandestine imposition of LNG into the Columbia River. He wrote an article afterward for the North Coast Times Eagle, which was in the October 2005 issue, from which what I'm going to read is excerpted. And his mention of Calpine and LNG, well, it disappeared into bankruptcy and has been replaced by Oregon LNG. The primary issue of the campaign was the manner in which the port held private meetings with representatives of Calpine Corporation to deliberate the merits of granting a long-term lease for LNG import outside of the public view. Certain other issues derive from this Calpine lease. Many contend that this was a consummately bad deal from a financial point of view, considering the outrageous profit potential for the corporation. In addition, granting control of the property for such a controversial purpose was categorically irresponsible, because the port retained no option to withdraw from the lease should the commission deem the consequences to our area to be unacceptable. The port commissioners rationalized their abdication of local control of the LNG development by saying there would be many opportunities for public process, that Warrenton and the state of Oregon would need to approve use of the property and issue numerous permits. As it turns out, the port's claims were disingenuous. When Calpine asked the city of Warrenton for an allowable lease determination that would bypass an important part of public involvement in a zoning change, did the Port of Astoria insist on full public process? No. The port sent comments to Warrenton supporting the contentions of Calpine's attorneys. As the U.S. Congress considered legislation that would place sole authority for LNG import terminal siting with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the Senate declared states had no rights in LNG matters. Did the Port of Astoria Commission stand up for the rights of states? Have they even sent a letter to Congress asking for any state or local authority over LNG terminals? Of course not. And that was Peter Huttula, and an excerpt from an article he wrote back in 2005, which could have been written yesterday. And now I will go with these interviews from 2005. I'll start with Becky Hart. The liquefied natural gas backers are bringing out the big guns to tout the way of safe business in rural Oregon. Citizens, steady yourselves for the carpet bombing of LNG public relations. The state of California is bracing for millions of dollars to be spent on PR by the LNG industry, according to an article in the Sacramento Bee. Why us? Could it be it has become so dangerous for U.S. firms to have gas power plants and sites in the rest of the world because of our precarious political stance that these mega energy and power companies have to barge and store extracted gas in rural Oregon where the need for jobs and fairy dust outweigh rational security? Look across the river to Washington, a state of public utility districts created to control local energy costs. LNG plants sited in Oregon are for power manipulation, not local consumption. Guaranteed, this is about their profits. Wake up. And Susan Skinner. The Oregon Department of Energy decided that the only free market, which of course is not free at all but is controlled by the transnational corporations and the governments that do their bidding, can decide the need for liquefied natural gas refineries on the Columbia River, and that other considerations aside from perhaps economic hardship which the LNG energy might impose on an area are irrelevant. We, the public, have been invited by ODE to submit comments about our concerns regarding the economic impact of LNG on the Lower Columbia to help formulate standards, and that's in quotes, that it can apply to LNG projects. Here is a rule for ODE's consideration. The revenue of all jobs and lives lost, displaced due to the presence and activity of LNG tankers, security forces, and LNG refineries must be factored into the economic impact rule, quote unquote. Such calculations shall be made by an independent body, not allied with the petrochemical industry or the government agencies it sponsors. We are beginning to realize that converting the Lower Columbia River into the West Coast hub for the LNG economy will curtail our use of the river for livelihood and recreation, and that our freedom will be taken away from us by transnational corporations that have no interest in anything but making a fast buck off our backs. The occupation of the river by the LNG industry security state spells the end of a way of life here. The intrusion of the crack cocaine of fossil fuels into our beautiful place is the beginning of the endless petrochemical wars in Warrenton and Bradwood. Many are talking of leaving if the war comes here. Perhaps others who are equally as talented and committed to community will move in to replace those who have become refugees. Perhaps it doesn't matter. Perhaps as ODE et al. Has decided, it is best to let the market decide. And again, that's a quote. But let's not delude ourselves into believing we're playing on a level playing field. And let's not pretend that the rape of the Columbia River is value-added experience. Leslie Miller. What was the Port Authority thinking when it leased land in Warrenton that is zoned for recreation and as wetlands for heavy industrial use? Why was this done without public input? This simply defies Warrenton's land use plan. The zoning needs to be changed before such a lease is signed if elected officials have any sense of ethics, morals, or represent our society's love and respect for public land. It appears they think the people they represent, both liberals and conservatives, don't have the brains to participate by way of public input. To hell with your local control over public property. We know better than you, stupid citizens. Go to blazes if you wish to disagree with our clandestine, underhanded methods. The decisions are already made. We know better than the public. Lynn Nichols Farrar. The LNG proposals are another example of stay the course, thinking that George W. Bush believes shows leadership and makes America strong. Now more of us see that to promote the idea that we can continue to live extravagantly without a tremendous cost is dishonest. Whether it is lives lost in a global war on terror, drilling for oil in pristine areas, global warming, or LNG terminals permanently polluting, altering this region, it is time to look closely at the consequences of our choices and what we are giving up. How we vote and what we buy tells the rest of the world that what we value. After the last election, it is difficult to imagine a dramatic change in direction, but I am still hopeful that we will have the integrity to acknowledge what we have chosen and what we have lost. Having the courage to speak candidly about this pickle we are all in, over 6 billion of us now, 1/3 of the population growth in the world is the result of accidental or unwanted pregnancies, could help unify a fragmented world and restore our credibility here at home. That would be true leadership. But are we listening, or would we rather go shopping to quiet our concerns? And that was Lynn Nichols Farrar. And, of course, her mention of the election was the 2004 presidential election. Liam Dunn. I don't have anything to say about LNG that will be any different than what has already been said by everyone. Based on my limited knowledge and awareness, I am against the proposed LNG facilities anywhere along the Columbia River. Apart from the official public relations information put out by the proponents of these facilities, I would like to hear from other people who know as little about it as I do, who are for the idea, and I would like to know why they feel that way, vis-a-vis economic advantages to the area, increased tax base, employment, etc. The reasons I am against LNG are the obvious ones that have already been heard. Visually, these facilities would look ghastly in our relatively pristine landscape. Environmentally, this is a potential disaster that might be irreversible. I'm not wholly convinced about the potential terrorist threat, as dramatic as it may seem, although it is also a possible irreversible catastrophe. And I feel the safety precautions that might be taken in regards to the threat of terrorism will have a negative effect on the natural homegrown commerce we have developed on the river and in the local region. Initially, I felt betrayed and disgusted at the behind-closed-doors way in which the lease was given to the LNG proponents, and although there has been a modicum of contrition on the part of our local officials toward their lack of faith in open public discourse, how am I to feel secure that this kind of policy won't happen again? Who among our elected officials will give us that kind of assurance? It has been a surprise to me that some of our local cultural and business boosters who appear to wear the mantle of caring for our historical and natural pristine legacy are in favor of the LNG project, and that some of these people are on the LNG payroll as liaison, advisors, and promoters. But maybe it is no surprise to realize that the bottom line motivation of much of this is the lure of what some believe to be the almighty dollar. Pardon my naivete, but I see no almighty in the dollar. And that was, of course, Liam Dunn. Michael Link. I think Calpine sucks. I don't want this to be an industrial community. It might give us about 10 jobs, but that's not worth the loss of property values or destruction of the area's aesthetics. This is supposedly about homeland security. We are told we need LNG around the country to maintain the status quo of our energy. Whether the community wants LNG or not, the federal government says we have to have it. We have no choice. That makes me mad, and I'd be mad even if I were a supporter of LNG. Rita Smith. The LNG facility idea has sent chills down my spine since I first heard of it. That some would consider compromising our special area and way of life for their own glory and greed is disgusting. Not surprising, but disgusting. Shame on those who perpetrated this process, and then tried to justify their actions with propaganda about jobs and tax revenues. All you have to do is read the real facts to know it is all hype. Shame on them. And that was Rita Smith. Chris Grant. What advantages to our quality of life would LNG bring us? Some jobs? In trade for what? Follow the money. It doesn't go to the little person. That's for sure. And that was Chris Grant. Chris Dyler. Who will locally benefit from an LNG terminal? I won't. It will offer jobs. We are told 40 to 60 of them, and apparently will increase the tax base by 16% or $6 million per year. That sounds really good. The port commissioners told me they believe Calpine, which is now, of course, Oregon LNG, will provide these benefits voluntarily and safely, so their neighbors and friends will have a prosperity and a strong community to look forward to. Astoria, wake up. How many remotely orchestrated capitalist schemes have you fallen into? Where has the fur trade gone? Where are the canneries and the mighty mills? What these industries have in common is a strong dependence on the extraction of what those unimaginative creeps call natural resources. And Carolyn Dunn. Eudora Welty said in The Eye of the Story that out of love you can speak with straight fury. And so we discover that straight fury is indeed our natural response to the multiple LNG siting applications that threaten our area. The devious liquid natural gas assault by power companies on community after community around the edges of the United States, backed by an administration in Washington, D.C., which is as good as a club of petroleum industry CEOs, is no less than an outrage. Straight fury is the proper response to those who present us with lies about LNG plant safety, the worst-case consequences of taking such a risk, which have been well-researched, is beyond our direst imaginings. We love and try to protect our land, our clean air, our people, and our relative safety. Many of us will move if one or more LNG plants is allowed to build here. Many more will never come. In straight fury, proportional to the depth of our love for what we have carefully built and tended here, and for what we appreciate and care for, which is given to us by nature, in straight fury we look an industry in the eye that should have withered in the shadow of other energy sources decades ago and say, no. And that was Carolyn Dunn. And Cindy Lee. Calpine needs to pay keen attention to demographics to find a happy home for its plant. Clatsop County is strongly Democrat in its voter base. Retirees and poor people see no benefit to them from Calpine. Ecotopian-type environmentalists are a strong, organized, and mobilized subset of the voter base. A more receptive demographic to Calpine would be a river community composed of union-loyal Democrats and traditional Republicans. Perhaps Longview, Washington, or St. Helens, Oregon would welcome the LNG plant. The state of Oregon is largely liberal, and even its Republicans are known to break rank with the party. Statewide voters would not appreciate an LNG plant at the mouth of the Columbia. Calpine would fare better upstream, closer to Hanford, which, of course, Cindy Lee has tongue-in-cheek about that, as she told me.